As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
This is the Leaf Report Podcast with Jonas Siegel and James Myrtle.
Across the line for Bozak to Van Riemsdyk. Back into Frenzen and score! Bozak going to the net. Kessel working in with a snap shot. He scores! Phil Kessel! Shot deflects, rebound. Holy mackerel! What a save by Bernier! Shooting! Score! Denis Cadot! What a save! Off the crossbar and in! Rebound!
All right, we are back with another edition of the Leaf Report podcast. James, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You haven't been around through some of this destruction. Do you feel like you're missing something, or do you kind of get a good read on it from the outside?
Maybe this sounds bad, but I feel like I was ready for a bit of a break. You know, for people that don't know, my son was born about 10 days ago, so I decided when he was born to take 2 weeks off, so I had no idea what was going to be happening with the Leafs at that point when I decided to do that. But as it turned out, they were well out of the playoffs by then. And it's kind of been like, I mean, you'll be able to inform me better, but the last 11, 12 days that I've missed have been kind of like more of the same, right? I mean, they were on this downward trajectory. They beat Edmonton, but that's really all that's happened since I've been away.
It's like I've seen, like you, I've seen a lot of bad teams and crazy spells of losing. But I don't think I've seen anything quite like this. Like, it just seems like they can't find a way to dig themselves out. And it's funny, like, James, after the game the other night, I was talking to one of the players, and he said, like, we just can't figure out a way to win a game. It's like every game they find a way to lose. And there's just, like, you see it. You don't even need to be around the team. People can see it on TV. They just don't have any confidence right now. Like, they just look like a team that's had all of their spirit sapped. It's something to behold. I mean, this is 27 games. Like, this is not a short spell. This is like, what is that, a third of the season?
Yeah. And it's half of the games that they've played so far, almost half the games they've played this season. And the crazy thing is that it's the strangest season I can think of for any team, because the first 31 games, they had such a good record, and then they just have had absolutely nothing since that point. And it's, you know, they had a weird schedule this year with all of those home games at the beginning of the year. I mean, that's obviously, that helps a little bit. Their schedule is relatively easy the first 30 games, but for it to fall off the way it has, you know, I think that what's happened is that this organization, having collapse after collapse after collapse, it's kind of compounded itself. And when these players get in a tailspin, they aren't able to find a way out of it. And instead of collapsing at the end of the season when there's an end in sight, they did it so early in the year that it's just going to go on and on. I still feel like they're going to win some games over here over the rest of the way, but you keep subtracting pieces from the roster the way they have, maybe that's not the case. I mean, maybe they're going to just be terrible the rest of the way.
But it's hard to envision, like, Kessel in this stretch is shooting 5%.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to envision that Kessel, Van Riemsdyk, like, guys with that amount of talent and that ability to score goals could go so cold. But there are some nights, like, where you look at those guys and they're just not engaged. And I just wrote a story on the top line for today. And you look at their possession stats are good since the coaching change, and yet it hasn't translated. And from speaking to Van Riemsdyk about it, like, he has never seen anything like this in his life where it just all goes, like, for 2 months. Like, this is not a week. This is 2 months where really talented offensive players just can't get anything going. I don't know. There's some degree of luck here, and then there's just, like, this funk that's kind of swept over the team. What do you think the balance between the two is?
I would say it's probably 60-65% of it is just inexplicable. And you look at, I mean, they played well in some games. I thought they looked good against Montreal. You know, I thought they played really well in that game. And there's been a lot of those games where they've just lost by one goal. I think five of their last six losses, they've lost by one goal. I mean, the games have been relative, even against Florida. I mean, it was a relatively close hockey game. And it seems like in all of these close games, it always goes against them. And it's always one bad mistake or a really bad first 10 minutes kills them. And all those games that were going their way early, they're all gone against them. So, I mean, by no means do I think this is a good hockey team. I mean, I've been on the record saying all along that this was basically an 80 to 88 point team. And that's where I thought they would be. But the fact is, I mean, right now they're playing like one of the worst teams in the last 5 or 6 years in the NHL. And I just don't think they're that bad.
Well, and you look at that stretch when they brought in Peter Horacek and fired Randy Carlyle. Initially, after that, they were actually like playing decently. They just couldn't score. Like, they had, 11 goals in the 11 games that they lost consecutively. Like, they just couldn't score. And then it was just like, oh, well, here we go again. And from talking to players in the room, that's kind of the vibe that's taken over. It's just like this real – I loved how everyone was really surprised that Olli Jokinen said it was negative, like it was going to be positive in a dressing room that's lost 23 of 26 at that point. But they just feel like anytime something – like they can come into a game with energy and excitement, and then something goes wrong early in the game, and it's like, okay, here we go again. Yeah, that's kind of what it's been like.
It's like the most mentally fragile team I think we've ever seen. And in Toronto, that's saying something because we've seen quite a few of those. And I think, you know, we've touched on this before, but it's a good thing for the organization to bottom out like this. It really is. I mean, they had to see, there's been so much denial, I think, in the front office over the problem structurally with this team. And there can't be any denial about how bad this group is now. There just can't. And we're seeing the potential for how wrong this can go, you know, and that, I mean, I think the reality is that the ceiling for this group is not high enough for them to stick with it. And it's time to start pulling apart some of these pieces.
Well, and that's the key point. Like, no matter, they're not this bad, obviously. But as good as they could be was never reason to keep that core together. But here's my, I don't know if beef is the right word, but I'm still skeptical. I mean, it's great in theory to say you're going to break it all down and you're going to, you know, tear about the team. It's really hard to get it right. You know, it's hard to make the right draft picks. It's hard to make the right signings. It's hard to rebuild a team. And I think what I'm curious about is how patient do you think they're going to be? Like, it requires patience not to try to fast forward this thing along. Do you think Brendan Shanahan and that team can be patient in this market?
They're going to try. I mean, I get asked this over and over again. Are they going to be able to do this? Are they going to be able to figure it out? I mean, who knows?
Who knows, right?
Exactly. We've never seen Shanahan run a team, so I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to evaluate him on. I think he made some poor decisions initially. I think anyone could have seen that Randy Carlyle wasn't the right coach for this team. I don't know why Dave Nonis is still in the general manager's chair. I realize they need someone with NHL experience, but I don't think he's the right guy given the mistakes that have been made in the past. But for the most part, this is still
a work in progress what Brendan Shanahan is trying to do here. And it's not an easy process. It's actually, in fact, a very, very difficult process, taking such a dysfunctional organization, an organization that sort of has this culture of ingrained in it of being terrible, and turning that around. And I look at teams, I know you wrote about Detroit, I look at a team, I think like Tampa Bay, because Tampa Bay had that just absolutely brutal season. They had ownership problems, they had coaching problems, they had management problems, they had all kinds of issues. And the fact that they've turned it around and now they're one of the best teams in the league, I mean, I think that that's kind of the blueprint for how fast sometimes you can turn it around. But it takes a lot of smart decisions in a row, kind of like you're building a house brick after brick. You got to get all the bricks in the right place, otherwise the house isn't going to stand up. And the Lightning have done that. And Steve Yzerman was very lucky when he went in there that he had Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman to build around. And the fact is that the Leafs are going to be trying to do something similar without two guys like that.
But that's it, right? The Lightning aren't the Lightning if they don't have Stamkos. Like, that's a franchise-changing talent. And obviously, there's still a chance that the Leafs get a player like that. But how do you do that if you don't get that player? You have to draft and develop really well. And listen, like you mentioned, they've made a lot of smart moves. Like, they signed Tyler Johnson as a free agent. They signed Valtteri Filppula. Like, they trade for Ben Bishop. They've done some smart things, but they still had like those two massive building blocks in place, and you just don't know if you're going to have that. So I'm really curious, given all the little indicators that draft and development is going to be their thing, if they can do it and if they can do it patiently, because you've seen it, James. Like, when they get a good prospect, they struggle to slow things down and not get, you know, kind of engulfed by the pressures of the market, the media, the fans. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to be patient with that process when you're in a market that's gone this many years without any success.
That's why I think they have to set expectations for what's going to happen and not get confident if there's some early success from a player or the team initially. You know, if they can't, I mean, let's use it this way. I mean, maybe a couple years from now, they have a season like Calgary's having where they got a lot of young players and it's surprising success. I think a lot of what the Flames are doing is not sustainable. If the Leafs have a year like that, they have to stay the course. They can't say, okay, now let's go get a big free agent because we've had this season where we're a borderline playoff team. No, they have to continue to be patient. They can't be sort of wooed by the success. And I think part of what happened is that the expectations were very, very low for the Leafs going into that lockout year. They make the playoffs. They give the Boston Bruins a go of it in the first round. And that really set them back a huge amount because the moves that they made that offseason were terrible. And they've caused some major long-term pain. And, you know, there's just no recovery from an offseason like that. So if, you know, people ask me, like, is this going to work or whatever, it only works if they make smart decision after smart decision after smart decision. And they're going to have to really hit on some of their draft picks, you know.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that about, I guess it was the James?
Yeah.
Well, so I think it's funny you mentioned the summer of 2013 and that offseason. What's funny is kind of the contradiction of everything that happened. Like, there was, they bought into obviously what they did over a 48 game season, and yet in some ways they didn't buy into like individuals in that 48 game season. Like, I think Cody Franzen is kind of interesting in that, like the argument you'd get from Leafs management about Cody Franzen, well, it was a half season, and yet some of the moves they made were based on a half season. Do you know what I mean? Like, it never really aligned like what they were trying to do, and it kind of sold them into a false sense of where the team was at when, you know, like you mentioned before, the ceiling was never going to be cup contention. So where were you going? Do you think they have a better understanding of what they have now?
Yes, and the thing too that's good is that Shanahan and Dubas and Hunter, there is no loyalty to what's there. I mean, they don't feel like they owe anything to the players that are there or the roster that's there. They're not going to be, I don't think that this season has worn that heavily on that group. I don't think that they're losing sleep over this right now. I think they feel like we're new to this. This isn't our team. Now we know what we have. Let's start the process of building the group that we want to have together. I feel like I've got a very good sense of where they're sitting and that's where they are, you know. Would they have liked to have had success? Sure. But that they, the fact that they didn't, I feel like they don't feel like that reflects on them. And that Shanahan's presentation to the board, which was in the last couple of weeks, was saying essentially, okay, you hired me in April. I took this time to make some changes, and this is what I see here. This is what we need to do. And essentially what he said they need to do is they need to take three steps back before they take one forward. And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you can be skeptical of whether or not they're going to have success, and I think that that's fair. But if you look at all the options for what they should do, I think that they're picking the right one.
Yeah, I agree. And listen, you and I have both written a lot about the core of the roster, you know, even going back to like November-ish, I think, even probably before that, actually, certainly before that. But how much of the team do you think gets broken down? Because you look at some of the pieces that they do have, and, you know, Nazem Kadri, in all his honesty, pointed this out. It's not like they're going to have 25 new players. I would imagine he'll stick around. I would imagine Gardner, Riley, probably Bernier, Van Riemsdyk. How much of the team do you think gets broken down? Do you think it starts like with Kessel and Phaneuf and then goes from there? Like, how different do you think the team will look next year?
I was on TSN Drive today with Dave Naylor and Dave Festchuk, and they asked me a great question, and it was, how far do you cut this? Do you cut this to the bone? Do you, the one of the phrases that was used in the Globe Mail story last week was scorched earth. I mean, do you do what Buffalo has done and cut out everything and go right down to, so you're the worst team in the NHL and you can barely get 60 points in a season? I don't think they're going to do that. So then it's a question of degrees of where they're going to go. And I think all the players that you name are probably good candidates to stay. They're going to take the guys that are 25, 26 and under and build around them. But if there's an offer there that makes sense to move one of those guys, I mean, I think if you could move a Jonathan Bernier and get back a really great return, maybe you look at doing that, because realistically, this team is not going to be anywhere close to contention in the next 2 or 3 years. Jonathan Bernier is probably going to be 30 years old by the time we're talking about that. Maybe you want to move him. Maybe you want to get two young goaltenders in here. Maybe you want to try some different things. But the other thing you need to worry about if you go the Buffalo route is what happens to the young guys. I mean, you can't just have all Morgan Rileys and they just get killed every night. You're going to need some veteran influence. So do you keep a Polak? Do you keep a Robida? How does that work? You know, those are the kind of questions that they're facing right now.
Well, and obviously Edmonton gives you a very good example of a team that just went with all young guys. It doesn't work, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, not only are you probably hurting their development, it affects salaries and cap and everything that goes with it, with contracts. So that way doesn't work. Like, I think selling everything doesn't make any sense. I also think the idea of untouchables is dumb, because anybody's touchable in any type of trade. As far as Bernier, though, you're not getting a return that would make any sense. Like, I don't think there's a team out there that could be convinced that he is worth, you know, a huge investment at this point. Would you not agree with that as far as he's concerned?
I think where I sit with him right now is I give him a 1-year contract and I want to see another season from him to decide what he is, because his first year was great until he got hurt, and his second year has been very, very uneven, and he looks like he's a starting goaltender. We just don't know how good of a starting goaltender he is. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'd probably keep him around. I'm just saying, if this is going to be a 3-year process, what are you deciding to do here? And if you were trying to get bad before you get good, maybe Bernier inhibits that, and he's going to make you better than you need to be. I mean, that's also really complicated.
Right.
Go ahead.
You're right. It's complicated because he may be, like, you have to figure out if he's your guy and if he can be an above average number one. And, you know, if your timeline, let's say, is 4 years or 3 years, that's when goaltenders, like, typically kind of hit their prime, you know, right around 28, 29, 30, is it not? Like, that would be, if you're trying to line things up, that makes sense. But then, like, I don't know, it's hard. That's why I don't think any of these decisions are as easy as sometimes they're made out to be. Like, even the Kessel question, like, unless you're getting a really good return, you know, like, you don't just trade these guys for nothing. You don't just break the whole thing apart just to say you're breaking it apart. It has to make sense. Like, there's got to be a process here.
Yeah, but then, I mean, I guess the question is, what are you trying to do if you're keeping Bernier and Kessel and you're bringing back 12 players? Is there too much sameness there? Is the team going to be...
Well, you're not bringing that back.
Are you just going to keep...
Are you?
I don't think so, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if they're taking the core apart, what does that mean? What is the roster going to look like? And I think it's interesting you bring up Edmonton. I mean, that's a good example. Like, say they trade Tyler Bozak. Say they don't have a lot of depth at center ice. Nazem Kadri becomes essentially the first-line center because they don't have a lot of options there. And say he has a big season. Say he gets 68 points or whatever. I mean, that changes the conversation for what his next contract's going to be, even if he only is probably a second-line guy, you know? And sometimes you put players like that in a position higher than where they deserve to be. They're going to put up a lot of numbers. They're going to be able to ask for more money. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be... I think it's going to be fascinating to see. I think it's the right way for them to go. And a lot of it's going to be on how well they draft and how well they develop. And they're going to have to start hitting on some of those draft picks that aren't in the top five. You know, they got that really late first round pick from Nashville. They need to turn that into something. That needs to be, you know, if they can't make that a Claude Giroux kind of player, it's got to be a Boone Jenner, or, you know, it's got to be something better than what they've done with those late first and early second round picks of late.
Right, and that was my point, you know, in writing something about the Red Wings, is that there's this misnomer, I think, sometimes in Toronto that you have to have first-round picks to draft well. Like, there are seven picks. You look at Detroit, I think the number was 14 of the 24 players on the roster were picked after the first round, and those were their own picks. Like, they've found a way to hit on picks that aren't premium picks. And I think I'm curious to see what type of direction they go with Mark Hunter, you know, kind of at the forefront. You start taking chances, like try to hit home runs, because I think if there was something that consistently happened in the past, I don't know, 10 years, is they went safe. Like, they never tried to hit that home run. And that's why I think you got the prospect pool kind of in its current state. They went with a Frederick Gauthier in the first round, where, you know, his highest upside is a third line center. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to try to strike big, you know, and I'm curious to see how they manage to do that in the next few years.
Yeah, and I thought the prospect they got in the Nashville trade, Brendan Leipzig, I think that is an indication of where they're going to go. You know, he's only 5'9". He obviously has some limitations, but he's a guy that has had huge offensive seasons in junior. In his first pro season in the AHL, he's looked pretty good and been able to contribute. He's only 20 years old. They need to make more and more trades for guys like that. Just bring in a whole bunch of guys like that. And, you know, part of it doesn't get talked about as much, but part of Tampa's real success is that they've got such great offensive depth forward throughout their lineup. You know, the guys you don't hear about. People hear about Palat, maybe Johnson. You know, it's Kucherov, I think, is a fantastic talent. And they've really got a lot there behind Stamkos that makes them such a good team. And you just have to keep adding those pieces. And it's not always the superstars that you're adding. I mean, sometimes the depth players are important too, because sometimes those depth guys can turn into superstars. You know, I think a Kucherov, I think he was a second round pick. I think he could be a superstar. And so, you know, the good teams in the league are finding ways to get those players, and the Leafs just haven't done it. I mean, how many guys are on this Leafs team that were picked after the top, let's say the top seven picks, because that's where Kadri went. After the top seven picks, how many guys are difference makers that were picked after that?
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, and only six players on the roster, I believe, were picked by the Leafs. Like, there are a lot of first-round picks on this team, but not many are actually Leafs. But going back to, you know, a question you kind of touched on earlier, I count, let's see, six, probably 10 players for sure on the current roster being back. Would you be okay with that? Like, do you think that makes sense? I count 10 for sure, I would say, are back. And I'll name them now.
Okay, let's hear your list, yeah.
Van Riemsdyk? Kadri?
Maybe.
Okay. Ponick? Holland? Komarov and Clarkson, because they're not going anywhere. Gardner and Riley. Robida. And Bernier. So that's 10.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the highest number that I would go with. Yeah. I mean, I would look at...
I mean, you look at trading.
Might have a lot of trade.
Right.
Yeah.
But like... And I mean, maybe you can trade a Komarov and whomever, but like... I still think there's value with Van Riemsdyk. I don't know how you feel. Like, who else on that list would you dispute? You had a question about Kadri?
That's what I'm saying. No, actually, it was about Van Riemsdyk. I don't know. It seems like we've got a bit of a delay or something. But Van Riemsdyk, like, you're right. He does have value. I mean, his contract is very, very reasonable. That's why you'd be able to get a lot for him in a trade. And maybe you can get an asset that's better defensively than him, or that's a little bit younger, or that's going to be able to contribute, you know, when the team's in its window. You know, it's there have obviously been a lot of things I've liked that I've seen from James Van Riemsdyk, but there are things I've seen that I haven't liked. And he's been one of those guys that's been kind of disengaged this season as things have gone wrong. And, you know, I don't know necessarily that I want to keep all of those players. So if you can get a great asset in return for him, maybe you look at doing that. I already talked about Bernier. Maybe you do keep a Komarov because he's a veteran guy that helps keep the mood in the room light, and it helps take some of the pressure off the young guys. Maybe you keep a Robidoux for the same reason, and also because you probably can't trade him. Right. But for the most part, I like your list. For the most part, I re-sign Kadri, and I build around Gardner and Riley on the blue line, at least for now, because those are young assets that I think those players still have the potential to get better.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And it's just, James, like, we it's been talked about probably too much, but deservedly so. I am fascinated to see, you know, kind of how this ends with David Clarkson, or where it ends. Like, I don't know where this is going, because this is year two, and, like, he's questionable to be in the lineup for a bad team. Like, where does this go? Like, how do you think this ends? Do you think it's 2020 and that's it? Or like, how do you see this scenario playing out? Because I guess in a rebuild, it's not going to really matter that he's making $5 million, because the team isn't going to be very good anyway.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he signed for 5 years, not for two or three. I mean, I think you could live with it if his contract ended in 2017 or 2018, but I think one would hope that Shanahan goes into this wanting this team to be good in 4 or 5 years, and then you're still going to have this boat anchor contract there on a very old player. I mean, the best case scenario for the Leafs, unfortunately, and not a great case scenario for David Clarkson, is that he gets injured, he goes on long-term injured reserve, he gets the rest of his contract paid out, the Leafs are able to replace him on the salary cap. You know, that's probably the best case scenario. And he has had a lot of injuries, but he's not that old of a guy. I mean, he probably can play another 4 or 5 years in the NHL. So we talked about it before the season. I said they should move him however they can, even if they need to retain salary. And I remain adamant that that's true. You know, and it's gotten to the point where he's been.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you have
to buy that.
You have to take back a bad contract now. I mean, that's where we're at. I think at the beginning of this season, it might have been more realistic that a team would look at him and say, okay, we'll take him for him making $3 million a year. Maybe we can rehabilitate him. Maybe we can play him on our second or third line. That's not a lot of money. Sure. And we're not going to give you anything back for him. Obviously, you have to eat almost half the contract, but maybe we can make that work. But now that he's done it twice, now that he's played that poorly twice, his value is so low. And you can't buy the contract out. I think if you could, that would be the obvious answer to this, that you would buy him out. They're in tough. I mean, maybe if there's an expansion draft and a Las Vegas team, maybe. But I don't know why they would pick a guy like that up.
Right.
You know, maybe you can trade him. If you could trade him for another contract, like an Alex Semin or something like that, that expires sooner than 5 years, you do it. You know, even if it's just a terrible contract, you do it. And I don't know if that's even possible.
Well, because, like, even in, why would a team, let's say Carolina, take back a player who's worse on a contract that's worse? Like, even the Kings, why would the Kings, like, the Kings wouldn't flip you Clarkson for Richards, even though Richards isn't even playing for their team, because Clarkson, it's a worse contract and a worse player. Like, I just can't see a scenario where that happens. Anyway, I think people understand the plight of that situation. So basically, a lot of things are going to change with this team in the coming years. Do you expect, like, do you have any expectations for how it's going to go? Or we're way too early into being able to read that?
I want to see what happens with Kessel and Phaneuf. I mean, I think that those are the big questions. I want to see what happens with Bozak and Lupul. You know, if they deal all four of those players and they get very good assets back in return, you know, maybe there'll be more optimism than people think. You know, maybe the team will be a little bit better than people think. You know, it'll be very, very interesting to see. I mean, those are, off the top of my head, those seem to me to be the four key trades that need to be made. Can you get anything back for Tyler Bozak? I mean, there's been some talk in the media I've seen, they talk about getting a first round pick for him. I mean, if you can do that and make the trade yesterday. So, you know, that's what I'm interested to see, is what they get back for these building block players.
Well, you think about it, like, in theory, let's say you get 2-3 assets back of some kind for Kessel. One maybe each for Bozak and Lupo, maybe two for Phaneuf. Suddenly you're looking at, you know, 5, 6, 7 assets that you start to replenish yourself with. If they can do that, that's like it's not a bad start as far as, you know, starting to rebuild the team. You've already got 2 first round picks this year. Like, they can potentially set themselves up to get on a really good track if they're able to get a decent return for those guys.
And it comes back to the scouting, right? And it's not just going to be,
right,
they're going to need guys to scout these players in the AHL or Europe or wherever they're playing. And you're going to have to make bets on the players you're acquiring. Because if you trade, I mean, they have to hope they can get some kind of a prospect for Phaneuf. But with his contract, I'm not 100% sure how good that prospect's going to be. So maybe you get a kind of a B-level prospect, and you just have to have very good scouting on that player to say, hey, I think that it goes back to the same thing you're talking about with their drafting. You have to take a gamble a little bit on these prospects you acquire, and then they have to turn into something. I mean, that's the position that the Leafs are at right now. They have to try and get NHL caliber players in these trades.
Well, to go back to your house analogy, it's almost like you have to get all the right building blocks and all the right, I don't know, bricks and whatever else you use to build houses, but then you still have to be able to know how to put the house together. I don't know if that's a good, whatever. Anyway, you get my point. We have to wrap. Is there anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
Well, like I said, I haven't been around the team the last 10 or 12 days, so I was just going to ask you, I mean, is there, you've been around this team, I think, 7 or 8 years. I mean, what do you see in the dressing room? Is there any way that they can pull out of this, or is this going to be the rest of the way?
I think they're, I don't know. I feel like at some point they'll pull out of it. But I guess it depends what they do in the next couple weeks. I mean, if you take off, like, if they deal a couple of those core players, if they deal a Bozak, if they deal, I don't know, a Polak or a Lupo, suddenly they're a lot worse. Or maybe not a lot worse, but they're worse. But you have to figure at some point, like, the luck is going to change a little bit, that Kessel will start scoring, that the goaltending will pick up. So I feel like they'll turn around a little bit. But I mean, it's not going to be much. I think they'll pick up some wins. I don't see like a long winning streak or anything like that, but I think they'll turn it around at some point, just because Kessel will get hot. Bernier, I figure, will start to play better, as he has recently. Anyway, we'll have to see how it plays out, James. You have to go. I have to go. We'll try to do another one of these Leaf Report podcasts soon. It's the thought of a ride that make my eyes wide. I'm caught up, I'm trying to make all of my dreams materialize. So I sort of say my goodbyes to the straight and narrow. I found the new route, you about to see my life change. I make the means justify the ends. I make the cream materialize, keys to a Benz. And so I'm rolling for now, holding down the fort. Who's controlling? The ground's gotta blow them. Yup, y'all should've told them. My first felony's approaching. My first key took a freeze, now I'm frozen. I bought a black Mac. I'm out of control, losing bankrolls on blackjack. You gotta know it always crossed my mind at best. Be tapping the lines like Gregory Hines. Still on the phone discussing my biz like it can never be mine. I know the price, know the risks, know the wrongs and the rights. Still my blood flows ice. Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.